As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Want an easy way to stay up to date with the latest news and trends in the NBA? Listen to the NBA Daily Ding podcast Monday through Friday. Wake up and turn up the NBA Daily Ding to stay informed on all things NBA here at The Athletic and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday,
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Panic.
To be able to bring people together.
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Actually, what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
The trial you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
Everybody, we don't know how to tamper with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened. I'm just telling you what happened.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast. I'm Sam Amick, NBA national writer at The Athletic. Here, as always, we are going mostly West Coast representatives. We got Anthony Slater out west. We have the one and only Marcus Thompson, friend of the show, friend of in life. Marcus, what's up, my guy? How are you?
I am feeling like, honestly, that I was in like a gang initiation fight. Like,
tell me why.
My whole body is sore because I'm stupid. And my wife told me to hire movers, but I was like, why would I hire somebody to do what I can do? Like, I got a couple homies from church and I was like, we got this. I will never do that again, yo.
How
ever?
Hold on, man. I'm just going to put your age out there. How old are you now, my friend?
43.
You 43 years old? You're learning this lesson? I mean, especially at a stage
I'm pretty shocked that you needed this realization.
I mean, you do it when you're 23 because you have to. You might do it at 33 because you have to. You don't have to.
43 is the new 30, man. Let's go. I was just like, how much do movers cost? Because when I was looking up the prices, yeah. I was like, yeah, I got this.
I mean, I talk a big game. Boxes. I've never paid for movers, but I mean, unless you got that,
I have.
Have you, Slater?
I've had to move across country, or from the middle of the country, right. And yeah, I'm not doing that by myself.
Yeah, that's right. Different. So, I was moving around the corner.
Well, let me. Fred Katz, who I didn't even give the honor of bringing into the show, but our one East Coast representative, Fred, have you ever paid for movers?
I will never not pay for movers. It is worth it. Every time. It is worth it every single time. If I have to, I will save money elsewhere. It is worth it every single time. That's the worst job in the world. Whatever they cost, they're worth it and they deserve it. It is the worst job.
Congrats on the move. Getting into your personal life, Marcus, but you know, you guys, you settling in? You happy about this?
Am I happy about it? Of course. Yeah, I'm definitely happy about it. I'm hella sore. My wife and daughter, they're happy about it. So that means I'm happy. It's a little chaotic right now. It looked like we just moved in. But man, my knees are shot. my shoulders hurt. You know, my arms and legs are coming back, but they were feeling like noodles for weekends. Like, yo, it was an excellent, it was one of them old school workouts, Fred. You know what I'm saying? One of them, like, where you didn't have a 24-hour fitness membership back in the day. You just did community work. That was your workout. You know what I'm saying? So we just took it back to the essence of helping me get back in shape by starting to move. There we go. I was moving. Now I'm ready to go get some buckets.
I like how you signaled out Fred. Like, Fred would know about the old school workout. Like,
clearly.
Oh, man.
I look like someone who doesn't.
The youngster, you know what I'm saying? I was like telling
slander.
him.
Slander.
No.
You know, okay. No.
Like, Marcus Fred, is
Sam already happened, knew. You know?
Marcus is saying I look like somebody that doesn't belong to a gym. That's what he's saying.
Well,
you wouldn't know about hitting the streets as the gym, you know what I'm saying? Doing yard work and helping old ladies. And that was the workout. You feel me? That's how we did it back in the day.
All right. Contrary to what it might sound like, this is not the health and fitness pod at The Athletic. Far from it, at least on this side. Although, random shout out, Will Smith had my favorite social media post of the weekend when he shared with the world that he was in the worst shape of his life and blamed the pandemic. That made me feel better about my habits. Today on the show, we got talking moving. We got some relocations going on. First of all, wishing all the best to Waz Lambre, who did an amazing job at The Athletic and has moved on to The Ringer. And I didn't know this till a couple minutes ago. Marcus is going to be joining the legend David Aldridge on the Hoops Adjacent podcast now on Wednesdays. Marcus is the pod king now at The Athletic. He's doing Warriors plus minus. He's doing Point of Contention. We got him working overtime here. And before, as if that wasn't enough, we got to lay out the laundry list of Scribe accomplishments here. Mr. Thompson Scribe, not only are you the author of Golden and KD Warriors books that folks enjoyed greatly, you just tweeted out a hell of an announcement here. You have your new book, Dynasties, coming out. I don't see the timeline here. I forget exactly when it comes out. October 5th, Dynasties, the 10 greatest of all time teams that changed the NBA forever. Good stuff, man. Tell us about it.
Dynasties is my attempt to get my daughter to read my work. She still don't know. And Golden came out 2017. She still don't know that there's a $100 bill at the end of Golden. Like, if she reads it, she gets $100. She still doesn't know.
You put it in there?
I checked when we moved. I was like, I bet you it's still there, right?
That's amazing.
She obviously didn't touch KD. She doesn't care at all.
That's a trick, man. I'm going to steal that trick.
So you think Dynasties is the one? She's really into just random NBA?
She's into the art. So when it came to me, it was art, like an illustration combo book. I was like, at first, I mean, to be honest, I was like, that's not really my thing. But then when they explained it to me, I was like, all right, you know, I could kind of get down with that. And I had a vision for how I could do it. But then there was like the artist, and I was like, you know what? This might be it. She might, you know, because she loves drawing and all that. She might at least flip through the pages to see the artwork. And I was like, you know what? That's a win. Like, if I could pull this off, that's a win.
If she only looks at the art, does that qualify as
absolutely,
reading?
Absolutely, man. You know, okay. you're gonna figure this out, Slater, eventually. But, man, half of parenting is just trying to stay cool and making your kids, you know, care about you. So any little glimmer of daddy still got it, it's like life changes. So if she flips through, I'm going to be like, yeah. Because if she flips through, you know what that means? She's going to tell her friends at school. She's telling her friends at school, that means I'm still cool in my 13-year-old's eyes. So that's the game right there. Yeah, facts.
I like it. Well, I'll tie it in like this. The book itself, which is a really fun read. You were nice enough to ask me to do a little shout out on the book. I love the format. I'm hoping you are flattered by this description, but you know what hit me about it, Marcus, was it reminded me a little bit of Bill Simmons' Book of Basketball, but it had a cultural context and an off-court historical element that I thought was really, really cool. You go through and you talk about these teams, but then you take a, you know, kind of hit the pause button and talk about what was happening in the world during that time. You talk about the impact the different players and different teams, you know, had on that era, and you go beyond basketball, which is definitely your style. I know, you know, writers are incredibly tough on themselves, but now that you've had that cathartic experience of getting it off your desk, I mean, do you feel good about the final product?
Heck no. I think it's trash. I mean, isn't that how we do it, Fred? Like,
cut that out, like, Andrew. Producer Andrew Schlick.
So far on this podcast, you've implied that I am a person who doesn't look like he goes to the gym. And now you've said, yeah, the writing is trash. Don't,
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Don't you know about trash?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Those are the two implications.
No, look.
Neither one is Sam, true. Look. Fred's basically Arnold Schwarzenegger, and you know, and like Fred said on a Slack channel of ours, and you're basically Robert Patterson with the
See,
way you're, un- you're.
Unlike Fred, what I'm doing is I am creating this bond with Fred. So what I was saying was, Fred, you understand
James
the
Patterson,
feeling
sorry.
Of writing great work, but feeling like I wish I had it back.
Yeah, so almost every piece.
And you keep
that I turn
rejecting
out.
It, which is clear. You don't want to bond with me. Like, I keep doing this with you, and you keep taking it as a slight. When all I'm trying to, me and Slater tight. I don't have to do. Maybe I'll just go to where I know I'm cool. I'll just go to Slater from now on. But I finished it at the beginning of the pandemic, and you know the world was weird at the time. So I liked the concept. I liked how I did it, and now I'm just one of them people that feels like I always could have done it better, and it's a little nerve-wracking. So you know, you were one of the people I wanted to read it because I know you wouldn't lie to me. But
apparently I didn't tell you it was trash.
No,
that
it's just that I'm
feedback.
Not a good critique. Yeah. I'm not a good critique of my stuff. Like,
no, it was good. It's so funny though too, you mentioned your daughter, and honestly, I mean, I know you're joking kind of about, not joking, but like the illustration component that you talked about, the style is very much, I think, kid friendly, where if you got kids who enjoy the game and, you know, but don't enjoy it so much to read 400 pages straight through, it's one of those books that you can pick up and put down, you know, over the course of time because it's broken up the way it is. And you had a column on Sunday that kind of dovetailed into the book stuff from the standpoint of, you know, Dr. J recently gave his top five greatest NBA players of all time, didn't have LeBron or MJ on the list. And I agreed with your perspective on the fact that, like, regardless of what you think of Dr. J's list, one of my favorite parts of the book is it is another thing that you're putting out into the basketball space that reminds people what came before this era. As great as these guys now are, you know, don't forget about everything that came before, which I think is really cool.
That's the part that really, like, if I took away anything from it, it was like an even greater respect for that era, for those eras, for those old players. And we only look at them from a basketball perspective, right? We see black and white videos of Bob Cousy pushing the ball around with the palm of his hand. And it's like, he can't dribble, you know, he wasn't that good. Or we see everybody looking 6'4", they can't be that good. They can't play with this era. But one thing we don't consider enough is, number one, they didn't make any money. Number two, like, basketball was such this like scrappy little sport that nobody cared about. Like, they built this thing. And some of the components that they had to deal with and pioneer were so much more relevant than we give them credit for. Like, we talk about it like it doesn't matter. Like, you'll see a hip hop list, right? You'd be like, the greatest hip hop rappers of all time. Somebody put Curtis Blow number five. And they used to be like, bro, you know, Curtis Blow is not a top five rapper. Like, what are you doing? But it's a tip of the cap to a pioneer. Like, you know what I'm saying? We don't really do that in hoop enough. Like, when's the last time you heard George Mikan's name?
Right.
Like, basketball does not happen without George Mikan. It simply does not happen.
Right. I mean, how many people are listening?
Lefty layups. That's the last time when I was doing layups.
Yeah, absolutely,
layups
right.
The Mikan
drill.
You know
that? The Mikan drill. Like, it would be handball if it wasn't for George Mikan. It'll be like, you know, some little intramural league. Like, that's what it would be if it wasn't for him. So I just felt like it was good to, like, learn that stuff and learn what I didn't know. And I like the idea of seeing how basketball impacted society and culture and how that stuff lingers to today. For me, that was the most fun part.
It happens in other sports. Like baseball, they bring
very
up
much in baseball.
Baseball, it's, you know, the ultimate example of that.
Baseball, I mean, is like the opposite.
Baseball's kind of the opposite.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, people talk about, oh, Mike Trout could never be as good as Mickey Mantle.
Absolutely. Nobody's ever as good as the baseball greats.
Mike Trout would just absolutely rage in that era. destroy. It'd be ridiculous if you
just destroy 78 mile per hour fastballs. But we talk about, oh, these guys don't throw as hard as Bob Feller when you got middle relievers throwing 101 now. Like
somebody said, DeGrom was like, was putting the year together. Was putting the year together better than Doc Gooden or something like that. People went nuts. They were like, Doc, this is sacrilege. Doc Gooden, never be Doc Gooden. Like,
right. Dude, Doc's, yeah. Doc's a different one too because that star burned so bright and then that's kind of all we had was that little stretch. So
yeah, well, that's always the case. Yeah. I remember when Pedro had that run in the late 90s into the early 2000s and people said, this might be better than Koufax. And I swear the Koufax fans were about to burn things down. It was over. Nothing's better than the Koufax run.
On the hoops front, my last thought here, and for the listeners, we're going to jump into all the awards talk and talk about the greats of today's era, but this is kind of fun going down.
We don't want to keep defending George Mikan's legacy. Nah, I'm actually enjoying this.
We're breaking down everything, MVP, six-man coach of the year, all
Mike
that stuff.
Mike Trout. I mean,
that was the intent, but I'm down for this conversation the whole time. But on the hoop side, So I wrote that Chris Paul story recently, and I'll be honest, one of my favorite parts of doing the reporting of that story didn't make the story, which as you guys know is often the case, was reaching out to Jerry West to talk about Chris Paul. Now, admittedly, being kind of surprised that Jerry said yes, because we know how sensitive the league can be when it comes to guys from one team talking about guys on another team. Regardless, and, you know, kind of an offline part of the chat with Jerry.
Don't they have a name for that in the league? What's it called?
It's called tampering, just like this podcast. Just like this podcast.
That's a podcast expert right there, yes. By the way. That is.
Jerry exactly was nice and he helped. I'm not trying
to. A little sis, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. A little George, Mike, and Lance.
Thank you. Thank you. But like Jerry, we actually talked offline about training, and this is in the context of Chris Paul. Training in today's NBA versus back when Jerry was doing his thing. And I asked him at one point, like, Jerry, what did your offseason look like? Because he was kind of making the point that he thinks guys go too hard in the offseason. And I said, what was your offseason like? And he just bluntly was just like, oh, I didn't do anything. Like, you know, I didn't know. Like, he, you know, these guys used to roll into training camp and do what they do because a lot of times they're working jobs in the summer, you know, and they're making 50 grand. Playing hoop, so you know it's apples to oranges.
So, all right, it is award time.
Award time. Ahead. All right.
No, well, Marcus. So about MVP.
Are we starting with MVP?
No, we're gonna go backwards. These guys are kind of MVP'd out. I'm not. I think there's plenty to get into, but we can do it on the back end of the pod. I feel like the last couple weeks have been fascinating when it comes to what we thought might happen with MVP versus what actually happened. But for the sake of counterintuitive programming, let's go backwards. I don't have to drive the ship here. Which one you guys want to start with? We got six man. We got rookie of the year. We got some races going on. What say you guys?
Fred gets to pick first.
All right, East Coaster. Let's go. Most improved. Most improved is interesting because it's.
Because it's a Nick and Fred wants to talk about
it. I know. Is it that interesting? I feel like we know who's going to win.
No. It's Julius Randle. I just mean most improved is, I mean, I figure we talk about the down ballot stuff. There's a lot of these awards are just kind of like, are we going to say anybody other than Rudy Gobert for Defensive Player of the Year? There are like three coaches. We're all going to have the same three coaches for a ballot for Coach of the Year.
No,
that's fine. We'll go most improved. Let's just talk Julius Randle.
By the way, I think Fred glitched there. So there it was.
Oh, we got our weekly Wi-Fi Fred glitch out of the way.
Fred doesn't want to talk MVP. He wants to talk down ballot most improved. That's what he wants to talk.
I don't even want to talk down ballot. I want to talk. You get three places on your ballot.
Fred,
I want to talk about the guys who just missed the ballot. Let's talk.
I'm really thinking Andrew Wiggins should get a spot for seventh on the MIP ballot. What do you think?
If we're talking second team all defense, maybe Andrew Wiggins.
Can I throw a contrarian take out there?
Please.
There's a greater chance than not I'm going to end up voting for Julius Randle on this. Okay. But is there
Who
a case for Zion?
Option. Who
is there a case for Zion?
Yeah, I mean, you could, like, there's so many, most approved, you could have so many different arguments and types of, you know, a guy who made the biggest leap from year one to year two, which would obviously be Zion. You could, like, Jokic. Couldn't Jokic technically be, you know, a candidate? So I think I mean, yes, to answer your question, you could sit here and make an argument for Zion, because last season we were wondering, particularly in the bubble, like, not that he was a bust, but just year one did not go well for him health wise and performance wise at the end of the season. And then now we're talking about him as like an emerging superstar already before his 21st birthday. So yes, to answer your question, you could make the argument. I don't know that any of us would vote for him, though.
Yeah, I don't think it's a good argument, because I don't think we can say his struggles from last year was like a play thing. It feels more like an availability thing, like 25 games, right? Like, he barely played. Like, now, if he played a bunch and it looked like it did in the bubble, then it's like, I don't know. But, I mean, he was still pretty good. There is a jump there. I feel like the bigger jump than Zion in play would be Jordan Clarkson. Like, that's a guy who I feel like made a leap. Yeah,
two awards?
I was going to say, there's another award that we can discuss, Jordan Clarkson.
Yeah, we will discuss that, because, you know, we got to give Kelly Oubre some love for the sixth man. Oh, it's fun.
Marcus Thompson is firing him off today.
I'm gonna throw Michael Porter Jr. out there, too, by the way. Because
one thing I want to add.
MPJ he is...
Especially now.
The per 36 numbers, like, people like to look at that and say they're kind of similar. But his defense is just so much better. His efficiency is absurd. And when you watch him with the Nuggets, his role is so much more involved. It's not coming. Like, so much of his production last year came in kind of irrelevant minutes. Malone would kind of baby him for most of the year during the rotation. And now it's just he's playing consequential minutes and producing at a ridiculous level. Like, he's been incredible.
And glitch number two of the podcast.
Hey, Fred, I'm going to give a free advertisement here. I'm the recent purchaser of the Google Nest Wi-Fi router, and it works amazingly. I'm just throwing that out there. You might want to try it.
There we go. There's a free ad. There'll be more ads to come.
You know what's interesting about MPJ is, like, he might win it next year. There's still another level for him to get to. He might be the MIP next year. After being second or third on the ballot this year, like, he's incredible.
Well, I'm spoiling a little bit of my MVP perspective, but shoot, this year, you know, Jokic should be, you know, the assist is going to go, I think, to MPJ a little bit, because we thought Jokic was going to fall off after Jamal Murray got hurt, but MPJ stepping up the way he has played a big part, and those guys win in 9 out of 10 games. And so you talk about not just the awards conversation, but the context of the standings and the playoffs and the stuff that matters most. I mean, Michael and what he's doing from a timing standpoint is just couldn't be any better. The other thing that impresses me with him, you know, because I'm a sucker for the human dynamic with these guys always, is like the relationship between him and Michael Malone is like, you know, it's like you're in school and that teacher damn near gave up on that student that's in the back of the class and like never could have imagined, you know, that student one day being in the front row, doing all the right things, saying all the right things. Like, the turnaround when it comes to their dynamic is huge, because, you know, he was really, really tough on him for years at this point. And I think there was some doubt internally if he could get it to this place. So he's been great. We shouldn't just
Jaylen Brown.
Yeah.
You know, Zach LaVine, Colin Sexton. There are a lot of names in this category. I just think the Knicks' success paired with what Randall's done is what gets it for him.
Randall's also become such awesome. A good passer. He always had the passing there. Like, when he, I remember seeing him at his first summer league, and he's getting the ball and going downhill and kicking the shooters. And he played so different than he did at Kentucky. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. And he was always a really good passer, but he never totally and completely put it together. And now it's like the passing has been unbelievable this year. His decision making within the offense is amazing, and he's hitting every three he takes. It's ridiculous how much better he is.
I also really love the fact that most improved, so like, you guys know, a lot of times it's like, all right, the guy from year two to year three, and it's in the early stages. We just don't see this kind of thing in year seven.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. Like,
yeah,
I remember when he was a rookie and he's playing the Warriors, and Draymond, this was like 15 maybe, and Draymond's like, this dude going to be good. And he was going at Draymond as a rookie, and you were like, oh, okay, he's going to be good. Yo, that was like 6 years ago.
Right.
before he actually became good. So you don't see that. This is almost more like a comeback player of the year award than, you know, than the MIP. But that's a pretty big gap of where Julius Randle was pretty much done. Not done as a player, but you didn't think he would be the star to match his potential. And that's for him to hit that now after all this time. That's a unique way to get MIP, I would say.
Well, and we could do and probably should do at some point like a whole Knicks podcast. I've been looking at their stuff lately, and it's so interesting. But like,
I thought we had one. It's called Shattered.
It's called Shattered. Okay, but how about the timing? Is the, like let's crown it. It's so good. I just listened to all of it. It's incredible. I definitely recommend to the listeners. But it's also hilarious that we chronicled 20 years of negativity and dysfunction right about the time that they are on this incredible rise. But Julius, all of a sudden, is obviously a star and a guy who can be part of a star core. And the Knicks, you know, cap and their books are in phenomenal shape. And I feel like, in terms of the narrative, that one guy who deserves a shout out on the Julius Randle front is Scott Perry. You got the Knicks GM who essentially has kind of been replaced for all intents and purposes by Leon Rose coming in there, but still part of their program. I mean, Scott's the one who went out and got Julius, and that is the number one reason, if you had to pick one, that franchise is turning things around. I can't wait to see what happens, you know, if any of these free agents come their way, and this is the start of something, you know, more elite, and it's going to start with what he's been able to do as far as Julius.
It would be the second straight recent Laker draft pick to get most improved player. You know who got it last year?
Mr. Ingram.
Brandon Ingram.
Yep. And can you name the last few? Probably not. Pascal Siakam got it. Yep. Victor Oladipo. Yep. Giannis actually got it 4 seasons ago. So what Marcus is saying is right, though. If you look down that list, that was Ingram's bust out, early career bust out. Siakam, same thing. Oladipo, even Giannis finally getting it then. It wasn't like this. It wasn't a guy whose reputation we already kind of just knew. Right. You know what I mean? Like we had kind of decided on Julius Randle and what he was. And now, yeah, I mean, you mentioned the books. I'm curious with his contract situation moving forward, like you said. So
yeah, there's a little like Kyle Lowry.
Remember when they didn't get Kyrie and KD and they ended up signing Julius Randle and the narrative, like how mad people were, like, this is what you get.
And Kevin went out of his way to throw a little dirt in their direction when he was like, the Knicks ain't cool anymore, or whatever his quote was. I mean, they leaned into that for sure.
Well, Thibodeau's who they really got. It's funny. I'm still looking at these minute totals and him and RJ Barrett 1 and 3 in the league.
All right. Well, you just created a segue for me.
Coach of the year.
Yes. Coach of the year. That one I got more interest in. I'll be honest. And I admitted this to the guys, Marcus. I haven't done all my deep dive, you know, digging on all the awards. I know who I'm going to vote for at the top. But coach of the year, I can go a little bit deeper. And I do kind of love this race because it's a little bit of an eye of the beholder kind of thing. I don't think there's, you know, any argument here that you can say is 100% ironclad. You know, Tibbs is the one where, because of the stage, because of the history, and even I think because of his personal narrative, he's going to get a ton of votes and may wind up winning this thing. You know, he went from the taskmaster, which he still is, but like it wasn't working in Minnesota. The optics were terrible. You know, I remember when he was in the running for the Rockets job, I did a podcast with Kelly Ego on the Rockets side saying I wouldn't think that he would be a good fit in Houston, and got a little bit of blowback from kind of the Tibbs camp, and it's just things were not feeling great. And next thing you know, he's the talk of the town and in the Big Apple. But how do you guys see Coach of the Year?
Monty Williams. Phoenix is the one seed in the West. That to me is more impressive and even surprising than, you know, the Knicks being the four seed, kind of in this muddled, you know, mix in the East is stunning, but I just think Phoenix being the one seed is more relevant and more impressive from a coaching standpoint. I don't know.
I'm with Slater on this one. Like Monty Williams, I mean, Phoenix is a franchise that players openly mock. Like their ownership is ridiculed for not being able to get, like, how is Monty Williams doing this? And I know it wasn't this season, but how they finished the year in the bubble and how he had that team playing, like, informs what's happening now.
Sure.
He's got Chris Paul looking 28, and you know Chris Paul is not walking in respecting the dude, listening to a dude who ain't got it together.
Right.
Like the Chris Paul vouching, that's basically, you know, that's an endorsement.
Well, right, you could argue that with no money means no Chris. I think that's
what I'm saying. Fair. Like if Chris right. Paul is vouching for you, like that's
but not just vouching, like coming, like we forget, like, you know, Chris played a major part in getting to Phoenix. Yes, it was a trade, but he was basically the GM in that situation telling the Thunder where he wanted to go. And the Monty connection mattered a ton. Obviously, they were together in New Orleans. I mean, I can buy that. It's always unfair with some of these coaching debates where certain coaches get credit taken away from them because of the leadership abilities of certain guys on their team. You know, and I think some people are going to look at that and maybe not vote for Monty because they're going to basically think that it's Chris out there as the coach of the year.
I think I'm leaning Quinn Snyder, but I'm fine with a Monty vote. Like he's been unbelievable this year. I think I'm leaning Quinn Snyder. It's to me, the Quinn Snyder case is kind of similar as the Dwayne Casey case from a few years ago, which didn't turn out great for Dwayne Casey, but he did win the award, where he kind of overhauled the offensive identity of a team that there was so much continuity on. And I don't know, I guess there's a debate to be had over building something if building something from relative scratch is more difficult, or if changing over part of the identity of a team that's already existed in its current form for so long is more difficult. But they take so many threes. It's not like they took few threes a couple of years ago, but it's just to such an extreme now. So many guys there are having career years, and I think he's played a big part of that. You guys mentioned Clarkson, but Ingles is having a career year, and Mike Conley is having a huge bounce back season, and Donovan Mitchell's made a huge bump. And I just feel like with what Utah is doing right now and how cohesive they play, I lean more towards Quinn Snyder, but it's really tough. Monty's done an amazing job, and Tibbs has taken a team that I just thought was going to be not a team we would be talking about at this point of the season, and right. Now they've got, you know, their home court advantage team, so it's really tough.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So admittedly, I don't know who I'm voting for yet. So you guys are almost helping me kind of do some of the homework here. But a couple thoughts on the guys you mentioned. With Monty, I think Monty also deserves credit for, to your point, Marcus, this is greater than this season. You got to go back to last season, for coming into an environment with an owner in Robert Sarver who had a lot of, you know, negativity in his recent past. They hadn't made the playoffs since 2010, and establishing a rapport with that individual. And I've talked to Robert about Monty. So they get a positive thing going with this owner who is widely ridiculed. So that's a check in the right box. Then you have a positive connection with Devin Booker, where he invested all in on Devin right out the gate. Here's what I see in you. You know, we're going to turn this into a winner, get you on that stage. So you make the right connection there. It's relationship stuff that he just progressed and progressed and progressed. Then he does it with Chris. So, you know, I don't have any problem at all with the Monty vote. With Quinn, similar type locker room stuff. Quinn's ability to you know, not that he did it by himself, but to help shepherd that group through what happened last March, and the fact that this was a team that we thought was going to get completely broken up. You know, we obviously reported that the relationship between Donovan and Rudy, you know, that people thought it was unsalvageable, all that stuff. The whole backdrop makes it even more remarkable that they are where they are, you know, because they go in the bubble, get bounced by Denver. It's heartache. It's the kind of stuff that typically leads to finger pointing and division. And next thing you know, they take it the other direction. I think Quinn deserves credit for that too.
And how many of us were waiting for Utah to fulfill? Like, how many of us were like, yo, this ain't gonna last? You know, this is what Utah does.
And they had contract stuff, right, yeah, Marcus? Like they had contracts to figure out.
At this point, everybody with any kind of sanity is looking at Utah as a legit force, not like a team that got that gets hot early and their system works in the regular season, so it racks up wins, and then they're gonna lose. Like, I think people would be surprised if they're a first round exit, like, because they do look legit and they are playing. They pass the eye test in a way they haven't before, which is like Fred is saying, it's unique to do with the same dudes, right? Like to almost reinvent a team, like in the middle of that same team, right? Like that's pretty unique, because I did not believe this team at all. I'll tell you that right now. I did not, but I was like, yeah, whatever. We know what Utah does, but I wouldn't want to face them.
Before we move on, and this is not a guy who is going to get a lot of votes, I'm just curious your guys' opinions. Can we talk a little bit about Steve Kerr? Because the other Steve.
He's tossed some warrior out for every award.
He has.
I don't think they're
such a homer. Such a homer. No, Steve Nash. I just think his situation is fascinating too. Because if I told you without any context and you didn't know what happened this season, all right, the Nets have a coach. I'm not telling you who it is. And they basically didn't have their three stars for most of the year. At times they had two of the three stars, but at times for long stretches, they only had one. And then they're going to get to the point where they're half a game out of the top seed in the East. You know, that person would be getting some love. But with Nash, I think you got these competing forces. You got the rookie element of him being a rookie head coach, and people don't know how much of this is him versus a bunch of not even just Hall of Famers, like all-time players being on your roster, even when they're not playing, like those dudes are incredibly smart. Then you got the Mike D'Antoni thing, you know, as his lead assistant coach. I think, fair or not, a lot of people look at the Nets and they want to dish some of that credit D'Antoni's way. But how do you guys see the Nash's situation?
Yeah, if you laid out games played to me, you know, you didn't tell me their record. You just said, this is how many games Kevin Durant's going to play. This is how many Kyrie's going to play. This is how many James Harden's going to play. I would guess a much worse record, number one. And number two, didn't we all predict that, like, there was going to be just, like, noise coming out of Brooklyn all year? Right. And remember, like, the LeBron bump of Eric Spoelstra? Like, stuff like that, in passive-aggressive comments towards Nash. Like, I'm not saying there hasn't been some drama around Brooklyn, but, like, none of it's really Nash-related or coach-related, and that's a credit to him.
Right.
He's done a fine job. I don't think he'll be tested
in the playoffs. It's a playoff. Everything for that team's playoffs. And Fred has twitched again, so hopefully I'm
he's done a fine job. I don't think it's the level of the three guys that we were talking about before. You know, there are other coaches who have done a great job this year. I think Taylor Jenkins has done a great job this year.
Doc Rivers, Philadelphia doesn't get thrown in this conversation enough.
There are a lot of good coaches. I just think those are the top three for me. Like, those are going to be the three guys on my ballot. I feel pretty confident.
Can Nate McMillan get in the mix? Can Nate McMillan?
I know, man. Nate,
I don't know. That's interesting.
Not enough games.
Right. This is the Joel Embiid Rookie of the Year debate. Has an interim ever won it? Midseason replacement?
I don't think so. That's a good question. I don't think so. That's not nice to Lloyd Pierce. I think we should not vote for Nate for the sole fact that Lloyd tried his best out there. All right, let's move on. We talked Utah and Quinn and everything, so I'm going to go to six man. I mean, to me, it is a one-guy race, but Jordan Clarkson seems to be out front. He's part of that incredibly lethal Jazz offense that bombs away nonstop, but how do you guys see that one?
I think that I've heard a little buzz out of Utah that Jordan Clarkson's not even the sixth man of the Jazz.
Oh,
Joe Ingles is actually their most important bench player. And I know Sam Amick is on that Joe Ingles bandwagon.
My favorite Aussie.
He's been a guest on this particular podcast that we're speaking on right now. I mean, Clarkson is the leading bench scorer in the league, and that's typically where this award goes to. But you could argue Joe Ingles is more important to winning in Utah. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, Clarkson got off to a really hot start and has really just not been the same for about a month and a half. He's shooting like 37% over the last month and a half, and he's under 30% from three. It's a pretty long period where his shot has just not been falling even close to how it was at the start of the year. Like, part of the reason why he was the front runner early was because he was scoring all these points and he was doing it in a not relatively efficient way, in a very efficient way. And now that I think that argument has kind of fallen off, he's had a really good year. I don't know. He's not my guy. Like, I think Ingles has had a better all-around year than him. Ingles leads the league in true shooting right now. He's been not just the most efficient bench player in the league, but the most efficient qualifying player at all in the league. It's like 47 from three. I mean, he's not just a shooter. I mean, he's responsible for a lot of their playmaking. He runs pick and rolls for them.
He's not a bad defender either.
No, he's not. He's like a Kyle Anderson type of player where he just like he is so slow, and yet you watch him defend. You're like, how is he staying in front of Paul George? How is that happening?
Paul George hates him, by the way.
I know. That's why he comes to mind.
I was going to say, he's a pretty elite shit talker too, which is my favorite part.
Oh, yeah, elite. So I feel like Jordan Clarkson and Joe Ingles will cancel each other out, and I'm giving the award to Chris Boucher. Chris Boucher, baby.
Another Warriors connection. Here it is.
I mean, look at this.
Joe Ingles is.
This is actually a bad look for the Warriors.
Joe Ingles is a Warriors connection, by the way.
What am I missing there?
Did he have a camp? Start a Warriors summer league. And we camp.
Man, I need to write another Joe Ingles story. His story is ridiculous. Like, he is not getting a lot of shine this year, but what he's done is incredible. We all forget. It's like, this dude was on the scrap heap. His career was over.
You guys want the top five in bench points this season? Jordan Clarkson is number one with anybody. Like Fred said, he's only shooting 41% overall, 34% from three. Montrezl Harrell, number two. You ready for number three? Can he get his name in the conversation? Carmelo Anthony, third in the NBA in bench points this season. I don't think he's
good. All right. Yeah, that's my sixth man. Let's
four,
go.
Patty Mills, five.
Yep. All right.
Carmelo,
I'm going with Melo for sixth man of the year.
Why do you guys think Harrell isn't getting buzz? Like, is it just because he just the it's a reaction to last year's playoffs, which it really shouldn't be, because it's a regular season award.
He's not having that. I mean, he's not having that great. He's not having a bad season, but he's not having.
It doesn't appear to be making much of a difference either.
Yeah, like from a team standpoint, it has not. It's been they've underperformed. It's a negative storyline, a negative narrative.
They signed Drummond to basically like hop him in the rotation, which tells you plenty.
Well, right. If they hadn't, he wouldn't be a six man.
No, I mean, I see people out there saying Marc Gasol needs to be playing over him, and Montrezl Harrell maybe will be relegated to DNPs when it matters in the postseason, and Davis is getting more time at the center. So I don't know. I don't.
All right, Fred's mad about no Montrezl love, but we're gonna move on here. I need some help on defensive player of the year. I think for sure Rudy Gobert would be my guy, but you know, the Ben Simmons candidacy I found interesting because, I mean, I get the fact that in today's game, you know, in particular, the ability to guard multiple positions with the type of wing talent that exists in today's NBA, you know, is going to give you a little bit of an inside track if you're as elite as Ben is. But I've been a little surprised by the level of noise with folks actually saying they think he could win it, even though it's not that much noise, but it is kind of there. I think Clint Capella should be in the conversation here, but how do you guys see defensive player?
I think it's Gobert. I mean, he's the most important defensive player in the league, and I know there's so much talk about this is what you can do against them in the playoffs, and there are certain ways you can make them less effective. And then there's all the noise from Utah, which says, "Nah, you know, you don't. If you move Gobert to the perimeter, he's just as fine." And I think the answer is something probably in the middle, where you want him away from the rim.
He's certainly gotten better,
but he's gotten better for sure. He's gotten better when you put him in space and pick and rolls, and he uses his length really well to get deflections and all that. And he's been so important to the caliber of their defense, which has been top five all year. I like the Capella mention. He's been killer this year, even as Atlanta's defense has not been impressive for long stints of the season.
Should probably mention the reigning defensive player of the year too, Giannis. I mean, we have this unofficial no love for Giannis rule in today's NBA because of how they got bounced last year, but you know, especially last night. I mean, he had that block on KD that was a defensive player of the year type moment.
Yeah. I mean, it comes down to so much of like who you pick. If you have it down to Simmons versus Gobert, so much of it is just about what you personally prioritize in defense. Do you want the versatility of someone like Simmons, who is capable of guarding 1 through 5 at a legitimately elite level? Or do you want the guy who is defending the rim and kind of your more conventional defensive backbone, versus Simmons being the more modern guy? And he's been great. I don't know if Simmons's candidacy cancels out Embiid at all, or how that works, because Embiid is a guy who can end up on a lot of ballots too.
Right.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Yeah, I mean, that's, to me, what does hurt Ben Simmons is that Joel Embiid's argument for MVP is like what he does on both sides of the floor, and the fact that is the Rudy Gobert for the Sixers. So then how do you have the defensive player of the year next to him if the defense runs through Embiid? I don't know.
Easy, because it's not – rim protection is – vastly overrated.
Overrated? Overvalued?
Overrated. Oh, it's just overrated. It's great. It's necessary. It's also overrated. Like, in a league where everybody's shooting three-pointers, where people just aren't living in the paint anymore, that skill, I mean, I'm not saying it's like number 27 on the list of important things. I'm just saying it's not number one anymore. It might be number two, number three, but if you have no impact on preventing three-point shooting, you can't be as relevant on defense, period. This league is built on three-point shooting. And for me, that gives Ben Simmons the edge, because he is going to be on the three-point shooters. If you're playing a number of teams, like if you're playing Utah, if you're playing the Nets, if you're playing, you just pick the teams you got to tee up against, who would you rather have in that defensive matchup? It's going to be Ben Simmons, because you're going to have to chase some of the league's best scorers. You're going to have to be able to guard the line. You're going to have to be able to be good in transition. And third of that is probably protecting the rim. So I just feel like what Rudy Gobert does, while he's obviously incredible and while he's obviously central to the number three defense in the league, I just think, first off, Philly is slightly ahead of Utah, so that kind of matters. But also what Ben does is so paramount to today's game that I think it gives him the slight edge.
Marcus, I can't believe you didn't throw Draymond out there.
I was waiting for the proper moment.
I think the argument coming out of Salt Lake City, I mean, those are all valid points. Really, the Quinn Snyder argument would be that the Jazz's ability to just go crazy on the perimeter because they got Rudy back there, like, that's the stuff you can't quantify. Yeah. And that's the stuff where, you know, they're pressing up in the kind of way that most teams can't, because that box is checked down low in the kind of way that most teams don't have. Now, your Simmons argument, even like you mentioned in passing that the Sixers defense is a little bit ahead of the Jazz, that is pretty damn impressive, especially considering, you know, Joel's been out, you know, he's played 70% of their schedule. And so Ben being...
And when,
you know,
Ben was out, their defense tanked.
Right, right. But the Gobert thing, I don't think it's like in a vacuum. I get what you're saying. But in terms of a team defense discussion, I would argue that, you know, what Rudy does, because they do have good perimeter defenders. Those guys, they just don't have to look over their shoulder. And they, you know, they have the kind of security that other teams and other players don't.
The presence of Rudy Gobert leads to worse three-point shooting looks. You know, an opponent's shot profile is really bad when Rudy Gobert's on the floor. I don't have the stats in front of me, but that's proven. You know, the way he shuts off looks at the rim and limits open threes. That is very much him. Now, I could take the argument from Marcus that it seems like you're saying a playoff defender. If you were choosing a playoff defender in the modern NBA where you're probably going to switch all series, you would rather have Ben Simmons. Like, for example, the Warriors would rather have like a Ben Simmons type defender to plug into their type of style and go try to win a title. But I mean, it's
here's
the same
question, right? Slater,
probably for MVP is this, it's a regular season award, right? And I'd probably
rather
have Gobert
season.
As a regular season.
I'm saying regular season.
I'd rather have Gobert as a regular season.
And I feel like what you guys are breaking down is like, if you need one guy to go slow down LeBron or Kawhi, it's Ben Simmons. But if you're building a team defense, if we're drafting for the sole purpose of team defense, I'm taking Rudy.
Yeah. Also, you mentioned three-point defense, but even if Gobert's not the guy closing out on the three-pointer, like a lot of threes are created by going inside first and then working out. You hit the paint and then you kick, and Gobert just takes away a lot of that comfort in getting to the paint to begin with. So a lot of those looks are not created.
All I hear is you telling me that that Rudy Gobert is only good because of his teammates. That's all I hear.
No.
Marcus wants to know if you can lock up a point guard one-on-one.
No, I'm just saying the ability, to me, the ability to put Ben Simmons all over the court is a greater ability than protecting the rim. I get it.
But I think the idea that he just protects the rim is a misnomer.
Obviously he does it. We're talking about him for Defensive Player of the Year. So by picking one, it's not really to denigrate the other. I'm just saying his primary value is rim protection, which is what you're talking about, which is why these other guys can press up, because if you drive, Rudy's there, right? Like it's all centered on his ability to protect the rim. And I'm saying like, that's incredible. I value your ability to deal with where the scoring is and the type of players, the fact that you can put Ben Simmons on really four or five guys, for me, it's just that's a uniquely incredible ability. And you're saying, yeah, I get what you're saying, Joel Embiid is back there, but you telling me if you swap out Joel Embiid for a rim protector, it don't do the same trick? I mean, pick a good guy, put Clint Capella back there. Would Ben Simmons be any less effective?
Jakob Poeltl.
When is
Jakob Poeltl getting on the ballot?
Yeah, put anybody who could block a shot back there, Ben Simmons is not any less effective. You might not even need a shot block. He's still going to be effective. And I just feel like that ability in modern basketball is a little bit more premium.
Okay, Marcus, let me ask you this. Because there's another guy who we haven't talked about who I think has... deserves ballot consideration.
Draymond Green.
Would you?
Oh, my bad.
There it is. I was going to say Bam.
Yes.
Has been awesome defensively this year, and he does everything we're talking about with Simmons.
Right? Yes, he's like the right. Mass.
He does everything we're talking about with Simmons and everything we talk about with Gobert, and it just kind of meets in the middle, you know, where he can guard everybody. He's going to defend the rim. He's going to get in passing lanes. He can play the four. He can play the five.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The only,
like,
only
I think he has
him,
a really good case.
Only knock against him is he just further far down defensively his team, right? We're talking about Gobert's team is top, you know.
Yes, Bam protects the rim, but he doesn't protect the rim like Rudy Gobert.
No, nobody
does. And yes, he's a versatile defender, but he's not a versatile defender like Ben Simmons.
No.
You know, it's a Diet Coke version of
Ben. So you're saying he's
combined,
like he's a poor man's version of Rudy Simmons, of Ben Gobert.
He's like the Anthony Davis mold. And Anthony Davis would be in this conversation if he was healthy, but
All right, let's check these last couple boxes before we let Marcus go out and sell some books. We got, what did we leave out? Rookie of the Year. We're saving MVP for last. Rookie of the Year, the main question that matters is where, you know, what say you about the LaMelo Ball availability question in the context of young Anthony Edwards and Tyrese Halliburton.
LaMelo's back. That conversation.
And he wasted no time going viral again. What was he on the court for, like 5 seconds before he's throwing that underhand full court pass the other night? That dude's crazy.
But I feel like Slater's got to say Wiseman just because he's got to stick with his.
I thought that I was wondering if Marcus was going to get a Wiseman mention or Nico Mannion in here. I didn't know which one he was going to go with.
And Nico, baby, let's go.
As a father of redheads, I'm a big, big Nico guy.
It's a three player race, probably really just a two player race. I don't think Halliburton's had a great season. I don't think he's in the conversation. Man,
they just beat the Lakers, and that makes them the, what do you call it when, you know, they
have the belt.
Spoiler.
Yeah, they got the belt without De'Aaron Fox.
Everywhere Sam Amick goes in Elk Grove, Tyrese Halliburton jerseys are just sprouting in the stores. By the way,
best wishes to him. I hope he's okay today. They're getting an MRI on that knee that he jacked up last night. But go ahead, Slater.
You know, it's Anthony Edwards or LaMelo Ball. LaMelo Ball has the more impressive, he's been the more impressive player, but Edwards has played all season, leads rookies in minutes, points, like leads them in pretty much every counting category. And Minnesota, particularly since they changed coaches, has really kind of rolled the ball out for him a little bit. I mean, have you guys seen his shot attempts?
Seven threes a game, man.
Yeah, and they're not efficient, and I think the argument against him is like he hasn't necessarily been a winning player, but I've been really impressed with him. He's improved, and I can hear the argument for Anthony Edwards over LaMelo Ball, and it's based on just like pure raw numbers, like totals, because he's just played a large chunk more games.
Yeah, I think it's LaMelo. Like he's going to play 50 something games now that he's back.
He's at 43 now, Fred, and it's so I'm a big sucker for percentage of schedule. So he's at 67%. Of the schedule. At
that's
this point,
fine.
More than enough. More than enough.
I care less about games played for rookie of the year than I do for any other major award.
That's fair.
Because rookies just aren't that good. So if you've got a guy who is so much better than everybody else, like I think LaMelo is, or at least was this year, just give it to that guy. I don't really care. You know, if we're talking about MVP, we're talking about great player versus a great player, and we're talking about the aggregate value that he brings to that team throughout the course of the season, and that matters. But for this, it's just like, if there is a guy who has consistently been a really good player for one team, and then there's a guy who's putting up numbers but was like a net negative for the first third of the season, then it's kind of an easy choice for me, to be honest. LaMelo's going to play enough. You hit that threshold where you're playing in a high enough percentage of the games, and like, I'm totally good with LaMelo. I'm totally confident and fine voting LaMelo.
He's contributing to winning too, which matters.
Yes, Charlotte's number eight seed. Yep.
Surprising season.
Plus, he's got a hell of a player.
For every reason that you would give it to Anthony Edwards, who's the only other candidate in my book, you could give it to LaMelo, and then LaMelo tops it off with the fact that they're a 500 team, which it's a little bit different. That pass at that juncture of the season with this amount to play for is ridiculous. Like, you throw that when you're in Anthony Edwards' situation. Like, you don't throw that when you're fighting for an eight, a play-in seed. That's ridiculous.
But LaMelo hasn't had any priceless Zoom media moments. I might have to look at Anthony a little longer, just because he didn't know who A-Rod was, which was one of my favorite moments of the season.
He's a great quote, clearly. He's like, Anthony Edwards is going to be incredible.
He's uncut. He just talks.
We talk about how like Edwards is putting up numbers. He's averaging three more points than LaMelo, two more points than LaMelo, and LaMelo hasn't beaten every other statistical category. Right. In some of them, you want to go advanced numbers, you want to go counting numbers, everything.
You've already made your argument that you don't really care much about games played in this category. Then it's clearly LaMelo. 100%. Your opinion. So.
Well, I didn't know going in. I think you guys just convinced me on LaMelo. I wanted to talk about the availability stuff, which is also a major, major topic on MVP, and we're going to end it there. The availability angle is not, we've said it before on the pod, guys, it's not real sexy, but I do think it matters a lot. I mean, I think it's led to guys, falling out of that top spot that probably would have been there otherwise, like Embiid. The last couple weeks, and I guess why I did kind of want to revisit it, it's just, I alluded to it earlier, like the Jokic candidacy, I think is
Wild, and he deserves so much credit for what they've done these past 10 games. And what I've seen, though, in the narrative is like, okay, Phoenix kept chipping away. And this Chris Paul MVP discussion, which again, I just wrote 5,000 words on him. I respect the hell out of the year he's having, but it's been a little confusing to me because I get it. I understand that we are somewhat wired and trained to feel like a number one seed, best record in the league should have an MVP candidate, like a candidate, fine. But the fact that Jokic was already the front runner and then he spent the last 2 weeks doing this, considering all the injuries they've had, and it's not just Jamal Murray. They play without Will Barton the last five games. I just don't think he's given any ground in this race at all.
No, he's only gained ground.
Right.
We're talking the last two. He did, for sure, but he regained it. And if you're alluding to Steph, who shot his way onto the scene with 96 threes in April, averaged 37 a game, I'd agree, but...
He did. It was the one night.
You know what? That night ended his MVP.
Marcus, I told... Slater knows this. I forget if I told you when we talked the other day. I was going to come down to that game. And you should never have like the column angle already determined because you know it's never going to... The game's not going to cooperate. But I was going to go down to my first non-bubble in-person basketball game where, Dallas against the Warriors. And I was going to raise the question of what would it take for voters to actually put Steph in that number one spot. And, and then lo and behold, Luka just destroys him. And that narrative all in one night just kind of goes away. I want to know what your guys' list look like.
Okay. It's Jokic. At this point, to me, Jokic is one.
Right. But what's your list look like?
Jokic, Embiid, like I could put Curry 3, I could put Paul 3. I don't know.
Why is Giannis getting no love at all?
Yeah, I mean, I was about to mention him.
I looked at it today. His percentages are better across the board than they were last year. His production's down a bit, but I mean, you're talking, 28.5, 11.1 boards, 5.9 assists, 1.3 blocks, 1.2 steals, true shooting of 63.3. The Bucks are three games out of the top spot in the East. I mean, I do think if they keep winning, and yesterday was a big win against Brooklyn, I kind of wonder where he's going to land on everybody's list if they, surprise folks and get that top seed.
I mean, he's got to be the top seed, though, because he was top seed before. Yeah. He was top, they won 50-something games last year. So I feel like if they're below top seed, that's equivalent of a step back, right? And Giannis needs to be helping this team go forward. I just, especially to overcome Giannis fatigue, right? We're talking about a third straight MVP.
Right.
And you've got to do something like exceptional, like Fred Katz level exceptional to be in that, to get that level of love. And I just don't think people are ready to anoint him, three in a row like that. He hasn't done that thing to make you say, I don't want to give it to him, but I have to.
Right.
Because he's been that good.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure Giannis will be on my ballot. I have to imagine I'm going to end up having him on my ballot. Jokic is the guy, but I have to imagine all of Giannis on my ballot.
Okay. What about, can you talk to me about CP? I need CP perspectives here. Cause I've been stuck in my head.
I don't think I'm going to have him on my ballot. There are too many.
Is he the best player on Phoenix?
That's the problem. That's the same. It's a Utah debate. It's with, I know we talked about Gobert. Yes, he is. But it's like Rudy and Donovan. I mean, his career resume is, Fred, I don't know if he is this year. It's funny. I think Andrew's still on the line with us, our producer. And Andrew, I listened to your pod on Saturday with Fred. You guys were breaking things down. And Andrew had a kind of a throwaway comment about how CP's season, I think he said that it was like, on par with last year with OKC. And at first glance, that kind of struck me because I was like, wait, on par, like he's clearly even better than he was. And then you go ahead and look at it and, and I'm putting my Fred hat on here. His VORP from last year to this year was
his VORP.
Value over replacement player, but it was 3.2. It is 3.2 this year. It was 3.5 last year. So, analytically, he did more for the Thunder than he's doing this year. He's had a great year, but you can't just ignore Devin. I mean, the other night, it wasn't their latest game, but they had a night where Devin gives you 31. Chris, I think, had like 12 and 8, and that's happening a lot. I mean, Devin's been incredible.
a really weird thing that I feel like is happening consistently this year is that there's this weird thing that people feel like in order to give a player his due respect, we have to claim that he's an MVP candidate. Chris Paul is having an amazing year. There's a very realistic chance I throw him on an all
NBA. Don't count unless he's in the conversation.
There's a very realistic chance I throw him on my all NBA teams. He is fantastic. We can have a conversation about him being the best point guard of his generation, but he's not the MVP this year. He's having a fantastic year. Wait,
Marcus, he just said that. Marcus, he's just going to let that go? Best point guard of the generation?
He's a different generation than Steph. He's 4 years earlier.
He said he can talk about it. He can talk about it. He said we can talk about it, right?
Talk about it.
We're not gonna stand this.
No, that's
Hardaway kid.
That's the new narrative that I'm starting. Now if we want to give respect,
Golden is still available in all stores, Amazon. Just saying. good stuff, gentlemen. All right, any last missives before we say goodbye here?
I didn't get my pick. It's Jokic. Okay.
What do you got? Another ballot guy who like Giannis gets left out all the time. I'm just saying his name, Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah. Listen, this is I told you. For me, it's the
what? Kawhi Leonard? Are you watching the Clippers right now? Are you paying attention to the Paul George?
Paul George
has been great this year.
You better stop disrespecting PG-13.
I'm just tired of looking.
Y'all talked all his head about him. And now
he's been great. My favorite Paul George quote of the year was before the season when he says he needs to get back to his MVP form. Or like what was it?
He's like, I need to play
my MVP season. It was like, what?
And he did. And he did, baby.
I'm just going to be honest. I'm in my feelings about Kawhi just from a basketball standpoint. I'm so sick of, since we all watch on TV, I'm so sick of turning on the television and seeing a good Clippers matchup and not seeing Kawhi out there. Like, it just, the fan in me gets exhausted.
You never know when he's playing.
We started this podcast with a Mike Trout over Mickey Mantle conversation, and we're ending it with Sam Amick going on a rant about load management. So finish us off.
Jerry West would never let that happen.
Jerry West actually is part of the team allowing it to happen.
He's not in charge. He just advises.
Okay.
All right, guys. Good stuff. I appreciate you all. This was a longer one, but definitely worth it. I hope everybody listening enjoyed it. Make sure, as I pull up the tweet, that you go buy Dynasties, available for pre-order. Marcus, you can send me the check later. Good job, man. I'm proud of you. Another book, another accomplishment, just added to the resume. Appreciate you. Thank you for coming on.
Hey, you know the best part about Dynasties? I got a quote from Sam Amick on the back, baby. Let's go.
Yeah. I felt like a big timer. All right, good stuff, gentlemen. I appreciate you. Have a good one.